Okay, so is this on? Can you hear? Sort of? Yes. Okay, so I'm going to talk about various multi-qubit entangled states, meaning more than two-qubit states, and their possible use for doing communication in networks of more than two parties. So my own network of people involved in this work, if you will notice, if you trace me out, also has some pretty strong correlations. Does anybody notice? Everybody's first initial is A. What are the odds, right? Entanglement. We practice what we preach, right? In the quantum world, entanglement is most commonly studied in two-qubit states. And as you all know, when you have, particularly in pure states, for non-zero alpha beta, you can't write this in product form. So you have entanglement. When the magnitudes of these coefficients are equal, you have maximal entanglement. Those are the Bell states. And, is that better? Claire? Yeah? Better? Okay, so maximum entanglement, we all know, is useful for computation, communication. And the standard example, which I'm going to go through very quickly, is teleportation, so I can come back to this later. So the scheme is simple. You have an entangled Bell pair here, and Alice wants to teleport some arbitrary single-qubit state to Bob, who has one part of the Bell pair. So Alice makes Bell measurements, broadcasts the results. Bob does unitary transformations. It all works. Great. So, it's amazing I can go that quickly through a teleportation these days, and everybody understands. Okay, so when you go to more than two qubits, in networks of various parties, you could certainly just distribute a whole bunch of Bell pairs and, you know, do communication that way. But what if you can use multi-qubit entanglement? Is it more efficient? Can you do stuff that you can't do with just Bell pairs? So that's one of the questions we want to answer. There's always a problem because multi-qubit entangled states can be difficult to prepare, and they are probably going to be fragile as well. So we don't want to just look at maximal entanglement because our intuition says that that's the hardest case to make. So we want to also explore whether we can use partially entangled multi-qubit states for communication, and also try to construct states that are simple and obvious how we can actually prepare them using current technologies. So the simplest network would be made up of, that is more than two parties, is three parties. And already there's a whole bunch of different states that you can explore in the three-qubit case. Some that we've been looking at for a while are the generalized GHZ states, which are the obvious extensions of those two-qubit entangled states I showed you. And then there's this other set of states called the maximal slice states, or MS states, which are kind of similar. In fact, they both belong to the GHZ class. They're both tripartite entangled states, depending on the parameter theta. They both include the GHZ state, which is a maximally entangled tripartite state. But they are not completely similar in their properties, and this has implications for what you can use them for, as you will see. So for three parties, we have a nice measure of entanglement called the three-tangle. And it's kind of nice because you can visualize it using this Venn diagram. So let's say qubit A is entangled with qubit B and C. That's shown by the intersection. So take this full intersection of A with both B and C. Remove the part that is just the intersection with B, or just the intersection with C. And what's left, of course, is the true intersection of all of three of these qubits. And that's what we call the genuine tripartite entanglement. And three-tangle is exactly that formula. So you have measures of entanglement, which are exactly what I described here. And according to this measure, both the states I showed you, both sets are genuinely tripartite entangled. You could also explore the non-locality of states using a Bell inequality kind of scenario where there's three parties. Each person can randomly make one of two measurements. And we can construct some correlation function for all the three different measurements made by these three parties. And what was shown by Svetlikny back in 87 was that if at most two of the particles have non-local correlations, then this particular correlation function is always bounded by four. And if you notice carefully, this function has a particular structure. It looks like basically two CHSH type terms. So, and that turns out to be important, as you'll see later. So if you look at this correlation function and try to figure out what is the non-locality in the two sets of states I showed you before, turns out you can actually derive the functional form. And here what's plotted is the entanglement, and this is the maximum value of that Svetlikny correlation. The maximal slide states always lie above the bound of 4, so they always violate this inequality. They're genuinely tripartite entangled and apparently genuinely tripartite non-local, as you may expect. But the GG8Z states are kind of odd. They don't actually violate this Svetlikny bound unless there's at least tripartite entanglement of 1/2 in these states. So that's a little bit surprising. This behavior was in fact just recently demonstrated. The paper came out a couple of weeks ago. So given this behavior, we can obviously, the next question to ask is this more general? Can you look at an n-qubit version of this? And indeed, there is an n-qubit Svetlikny inequality where you have n parties, each of them doing one of two measurements. And again, if at most n minus one of the parties have non-local correlations, then the bound on some particular correlation function, S sub n, is 2 to the n minus 1. So now bear in mind that the number of terms in this giant correlation function is 2 to the n. So there's 2 to the n different terms. So in general, finding the maximum of such a function is not a fun task, and grad students hate this kind of problem. So be careful when you try to convince them to do this stuff. But luckily, when you have the generalized G8Z states, which look like this, they are essentially n qubits in the state 0 or n qubits in the state 1, then this is obviously a very symmetric state. So actually, all those 2 to the n terms in that function can be lumped into effectively two terms, and you can use all kinds of neat tricks and lots of painful mathematics, which I'm not going to show you here. But in the end, you can actually derive a general formula for this. And here it is. Notice that the formula is a little bit different for odd number of qubits versus even number of qubits. And here what I've plotted is this function, these formula, for different numbers of qubits, 3, 4, 5, as a function of this parameter theta, which is the entanglement parameter here. And what's interesting is that there's this sort of disconnected region. That's why you have these two different formula for different values of theta. And also there's these vertical lines here actually show the region where there's a violation of the Svetlikny inequality, this thing here. So only in here is there a violation, and there's always a region where there's no violation. What's interesting is that the parameter theta beyond which there's a violation is the same no matter how many qubits you have. And this was something that was conjectured in past work, but so it's nice to actually see from the formula that this is in fact true. And apart from, you know, being, it's nice to actually prove this and have a nice formula, it's also useful because the Svetlikny inequality is related to, you know, certain ways of looking at the communication models required to simulate these kinds of correlations. So if you have this kind of a GHZ state, the question is how much communication do you need between all the different parties to be able to simulate the correlations in this state? And this is in fact related exactly to this n-qubit Svetlikny inequality. And again, the conjecture was that in this particular region, defined by this parameter theta, you can't actually simulate these correlations unless all the parties talk to each other. And that was conjectured in a past work. And again, this formula verifies and confirms that model. So just like with the GHZ states, you can also look at the MS states, the slice states. The n-qubit version of that looks like this. And this state is, of course, not as symmetric as the GHZ state, so it's actually much harder to do anything analytical with this state and try to maximize that function. But numerically, it turns out it's quite easy to figure out what the n-qubit formula is. Here it is. And clearly, immediately, you see from this formula that this function is always greater than this value here for any value, non-zero value of sine theta. So this confirms that for the n-qubit slice states, you always get a violation of this n-qubit Svetlikny inequality as plotted here. And again, one might say, well, if there's this violation, is there something special about these states? Are they useful? What does it tell us? Does it tell us anything at all? And in order to answer that, actually, it's better to go back to the 3-qubit case. N-qubits are too many to think about. So for 3 qubits, turns out that the slice states, you can rewrite them in a better form that gives more insight. And so you perform some local unitaries and rewrite the state in this form. And what's interesting here is you see that if you take the first qubit and do a measurement, the other two get projected into a bell pair, so maximal entanglement. And remember I said that the Svetlikny inequality was basically can be written in the form of two CHSH terms. And we know that bell states, of course, maximally violate the CHSH inequality. Therefore, this is related to why these states always violate the Svetlikny inequality, because you can always, no matter what measurement you do on the first qubit, you can always set the measurement so that overall there's a maximal violation of the two terms, the maximum value, which is basically related to the CHSH function, and so you can always violate the Svetlikny inequality. And turns out that the same property then tells us immediately what kind of tasks this kind of state would be useful for. And so an example here is what's called control teleportation, which is exactly like normal teleportation, except there's a third person, Charlie, involved, who's the controller, because he controls the teleportation. So the idea is that Alice wants to teleport a single qubit to Bob, but she can only do it if Charlie is involved in the process and participates, and therefore Charlie gets to be the supervisor. And this is very similar to quantum secret sharing, where Alice sends a message to Bob or Charlie, but it's distributed in such a way that both have to collaborate in order to recover the message. So how does this work? Well, it's very much based on the fact that you have this property of measuring one qubit and getting a bell pair for the other qubit. So here's a scenario. Here's Charlie, and Alice is trying to teleport some qubit to Bob, and they share this maximal slice state. And the idea is that obviously if Charlie does a measurement, as I said, no matter what the value of theta is, you can always project into a bell pair, which of course will drive the teleportation from Alice to Bob. So it will of course always work, no matter what Charlie's measurement outcomes are or what Alice's measurement outcomes are. So this process works with perfect probability and fidelity, meaning it works for all outcomes, and you perfectly reconstruct the state, or Bob can perfectly recover Alice's state. Turns out if you try to do the same thing but put in the GHZ states that I showed you, the partially entangled GHZ states, you can't do that. The other thing to keep in mind is that this works as for the slice states, for any value of theta, this works. So you don't really need maximal tripartite entanglement to make this protocol work. You can do it with very little entanglement, actually. So if you are not in a position to perfectly create maximally entangled states, this is a useful result. And using this insight, we can actually extend this and say, well, can we go to more qubits? So we can, in fact, basically by inspection, construct a 5-qubit entangled state. And this, again, notice there's a parameter theta, which determines the amount of entanglement. This is a partially entangled 5-qubit state. You could create, of course, for a particular value of theta where all the coefficients are equal, you can get maximal entanglement, but you don't need it. This state has the same property as I showed you before, which is if you measure one of the qubits, the rest are projected into a 4-qubit entangled state, which is a maximal entangled state, and that can drive teleportation of 2 qubits between Alice and Bob perfectly. So the scenario is exactly the same, where Charlie gets 1 qubit, Alice gets 2, Bob gets 2, there's an input 2-qubit state. Alice does 2 bell measurements, one for each of her 2 qubits. Charlie does a single qubit measurement. Everybody broadcasts their results. Bob has to do single qubit unitaries and control phase gates. And for every combination of measurement outcomes, Bob can reconstruct the 2-qubit state. And again, notice this works perfectly with unit probability and fidelity, no matter how much entanglement you have in the full 5-qubit state, which is nice. There are other 5-qubit states that people have proposed to do this kind of control teleportation, but as far as I know, they're all maximally entangled. So this is the only non-maximally entangled state that I know that can do the job as well. In comparison, again, the GGHZ states cannot do this. So only this 5-qubit partial entanglement can do the job here because of this particular structure. So what about n qubits in this way? Well, there is a pattern here, and we think we have the general form of an n-qubit partial entangled state that can drive an n-qubit teleportation process. But it turns out that on Bob's side, the operations he has to do can be a bit tricky to work out, so I'm not going to tell you the details until I'm sure about it. So I'm going to tell you a variation of this instead. So here's a different kind of protocol which we call quantum voting or password sharing. And the idea is Charlie doesn't want to be a controller anymore, he wants to be a sender. So Alice wants to send a qubit to Bob, but so does Charlie. Charlie also wants to send a qubit. Now obviously you can do this just if Alice has a bell pair shared with Bob and Charlie has another bell pair, that's perfectly fine. But they could also do this sharing a 4-qubit entangled state. And the difference here is that obviously the protocol only works if both Alice and Charlie send their states and participate, otherwise it fails. Okay, so there are obviously scenarios where you would like this. So for example, if each person has part of a password that unlocks some shared joint account in a bank, then you want both of them to participate. So that's a scenario where this might be a better protocol. Again, the idea is pick a nice 4-qubit state that will do the job. The state that we've looked at has this form. Anybody recognize this state? You don't immediately recognize 4-qubit states? No, I didn't either, but it turns out that this is a cluster state. So it is maximally entangled. I don't know how to do this with partial entangled states as yet. But what's interesting is you can do it with a maximally entangled cluster state. You can't do it with a maximally entangled GHZ state. So again, there's a difference. I think the whole talk is about all the things you cannot do with GHZ states. The process is again very simple. Alice does bell measurements, Charlie does bell measurements, everybody broadcasts, Bob does unitaries, and has to do some C0 operations and unitaries and can perfectly reconstruct the state. Works for all measurement outcomes, and the fidelity is perfect. This particular protocol is nice because we do have the n-qubit generalization. There is a nice formula for the n-qubit state that you would use as a channel. I'm not going to show you the state because it's kind of complicated to write it out, but it's easy to prepare. You start with n bell pairs and you do some C0 operations and you get the state that you need. Each of the senders 1 through n, each of them does bell measurements, broadcasts the results, and the receiver can do C0 operations together with unitaries to reconstruct the n-qubit, the different n-qubits sent by each of these senders. Again, this is useful, of course, for scenarios like password sharing. And the other thing is that this is anonymous. Nobody knows what the other person is sending. So that's a useful kind of setting for any kind of voting scenario. And also, it's secure because there's no actual vote being sent physically. It's all teleported, so nothing to steal. So that's good, too. Or you could have something where, you know, there's some kind of a network where everybody has to talk anonymously and securely, maybe a spy network. So it's always good to connect your research to espionage. So that's good. And the nice thing is that this does work in the n-qubit case. So, and again, it's an example of a protocol and a state which doesn't work using even maximally entangled GHZ states. So the moral of the story here is that n-qubit states, multi-qubit entanglement has all kinds of different structures and properties. And studying non-local properties and Bell inequalities can give us a hint as to how to use these different states and what they are useful for. But I think we're only scratching the surface. We really don't have a way of saying, hey, here's my task. What kind of states do I need? What structure do I need? That would be really nice, but we still haven't got there, and I think in the process we're going to come up with all kinds of neat applications to understand that.